I introduce to you your nominee for United States Senator, the Honorable Robert F. Kennedy.
Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, fellow New Yorkers, I am deeply thankful to all of you for the nomination that you have offered to me today. You have expressed in me the same confidence, the same support you gave so generously to the efforts of President Kennedy and his administration. In 1960, New York State gave President Kennedy the largest vote of any state in the Union. In every cause that he championed, in every crisis that he faced, you stood by his side. Now you have asked me to carry on the same effort in the United States Senate. I accept your nomination gratefully. And I shall endeavor to be worthy of your trust. 15 years ago, another Democrat stood before this convention as your nominee for senator, and he said, "The fight to maintain progressive government is one without end. The effort to carry on must never cease." His name was Herbert Lehman. And we honor his memory and his contribution today. For those who leave school, for those who face discrimination because of where they were born or because of the color of their skin, the promise of American life is unfulfilled. This is the unfinished business of New York and of the nation. And it's to this that I would dedicate my service in the Senate of the United States. I do not have to walk a tightrope between my party and my principles. Now, President Johnson is going to be elected President of the United States. So the question before the voters is whether the interests of this state will better be served by two Republicans who oppose the administration, or by a Democratic senator who can work with it effectively. New York needs a United States senator who will not only vote, but who will initiate. It needs a United States senator who can not only speak, but who can act. And it needs a senator who can work for New York by working with the Democratic administration, by working with Lyndon Johnson and Hubert Humphrey. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is of the greatest importance. I need your help. I need your support to carry out what was so nobly begun. In 1735, at the trial of John Peter Zenger in this city, a trial that established the principle of freedom of the press, Andrew Hamilton said, "It is not the cause of New York alone that we are trying. It is the best cause. It is the cause of liberty. It is in that spirit that we will go forward from this room to victory in November with your help." Thank you.
Mr. Rostov, what did you think of this campaign? You had quite an active role in it.
Well, New York State, this has been one of the dirtiest campaigns I've ever been in. I hope that we never have another one like it.
What do you think caused this dirt that you're talking about?
I think the complete ruthlessness, arrogance, and distortion on the part of the opponent of Ken Keating.
Do you think Mr. Keating's going to win, sir?
I certainly hope he will. It will be a loss to the state of New York if he does not. And however I am, I've been around politics too long. If Ken Keating does not win, it is incumbent upon all of us to back our new senator to see that we of the state of New York are represented to the best of his ability.
Thank you very much, John Roosevelt.
Thank you.
The polls in New York State will close within just a few moments, and Senator Kenneth Keating has just come down to greet the party workers. And I must say, he has never looked younger, stronger, or more vigorous. He literally bounced up and down on the platform, raising his arms in a great victory sign. He told the crowd here the turnout today was tremendous, and that's what he needed for victory. He seems very confident and very ebullient tonight. With the polls closing in just a few moments, we'll see what it all portends.
Ken Keating and fellow Republicans, one of the great senators in the history of New York State has been rolled under. Has been rolled under by a national landslide, a tide against the Republican Party. But he has waged one of the magnificent campaigns, and he has run 1,500,000 ahead of the ticket. 1,500,000. Unprecedented, ladies and gentlemen. When this campaign started, Jack Javits said that Ken Keating can overcome 1,000,000 votes and win. He's overcome 1.5 million, but it wasn't enough, ladies and gentlemen, to overcome the landslide. It's a tragedy for New York that Ken Keating is not going back for another 6 years. Man, John here says a tragedy for the nation, and I go along with him. It's a tragedy for the nation and the free world. That's right.
Senator Keating conceded the election about a half or three quarters of an hour ago. Senator Kennedy has just come in, accompanied by his wife Ethel, other members of his family, two of his sisters, former Governor Harriman, Mayor Wagner, other members of the Democratic State Organization, Chairman Bill McKeown, National Committeeman Edwin Weisel, and in the background you can hear this tremendous throng, most of whom, of course, are very young people, a goodly portion of whom actually aren't even old enough to vote.
Governor Harriman, I've sent the following telegram to Senator Kenneth Keating. My appreciation for your telegram of good wishes and your gracious and generous offer of assistance. As we both know, there is unfinished business in this state and in our country. And the utilization of your talents will be essential to achieve the goals of all of us. Signed, Robert F. Kennedy. I want to take this opportunity to express my deep appreciation to all those throughout the state of New York who supported my candidacy. I want to express my appreciation and gratitude of my wife and my family for the many kindnesses that were shown to us during the period of the last 8 weeks of this campaign. These are days that we will never forget, and we're most appreciative. But I think an election of an individual is not an end in of itself. I think we work in an election not just to obtain because we are interested in a particular individual, But we work in an election because we want to accomplish something. We want to accomplish something that goes beyond the date of November 3rd or November 8th or whatever the date might be. We work in an election, we work for a candidate, and we work in a campaign because we want to have something done in our community or in our state or in the country. And I think we started something in 1961, and I think that this election tonight was an overwhelming mandate to continue that same kind of effort.
Here now is Senator Robert F. Kennedy at the podium of the Overseas Press Club, the third floor located at West 40th Street. Senator Kennedy.
Last night I sent to the President the following telegram. Mr. President, first of all, let me say that I fervently hope that your new efforts toward peace in Vietnam will succeed. Your decision regarding the presidency subordinates self to country and is truly magnanimous. I respectfully and earnestly request an opportunity to visit with you as soon as possible to discuss how we might work together in the interest of national unity during the coming months.
Don Folsom, United Press International, Indianapolis. A very happy Robert Kennedy, the winner of Indiana's Democratic presidential primary, thanked his enthusiastic campaign workers tonight. He said his good showing was more than a vote for him personally.
It was really a vote for a cause, and would vote for a change here in the United States. I think that the... I might at the moment be the personification of that change.
Senator Robert Kennedy has just returned to his hotel headquarters here in Portland, Oregon. He had been campaigning in California during the day, and his return was delayed. He arrived here just a short time ago, and we had been advised that within the next 5 to 10 minutes, he is expected down into the auditorium, the ballroom at the Benson Hotel, where his supporters are waiting to hear from him. And he, of course, will make a form of concession statement. We were told that when he arrived at the airport, he did issue something in the nature of a very brief concession-type statement in which he said it would appear that Senator McCarthy has won the Oregon primary. But this vote today has all the ingredients needed to sort of confound the experts. The windup of the California campaigning ran contrary to Oregon, where a late McCarthy surge had helped create the upset which revived Senator McCarthy's presidential hopes. In California, that McCarthy surge started to develop immediately after the Oregon triumph. But then the revised and very vigorous Kennedy campaign efforts also were proving fruitful. And in the 48 to 72 hours before today's primary, including that nationally televised debate Saturday night, the Kennedy fortunes seemed to come alive once again. The New York Democrats stepped up personal efforts, a massive telephone and advertising campaign, climaxed yesterday by very impressive turnouts for Kennedy himself, halted the drop-off, and then turned the percentages in the opposite direction.
What I think is quite clear is that we can work together in the last analysis, and that what has been going on within the United States over the period of the last 3 years, the divisions, the violence, the disenchantment with our society, the divisions, whether it's between blacks and whites, between the poor and the more affluent, or between age groups, or on the war in Vietnam, that we can start to work together. We are a great country and a selfish country and a compassionate country, and I intend to make that my basis for running and over the period of last year. Ladies and gentlemen, if I can just take a moment more of your time, because everybody must be dying from the heat. But what I think all of these primaries have indicated, if I can just take a minute or 2 minutes more of your time. What all of these primaries have indicated, and all of the party caucuses have indicated, whether they occurred in Colorado or Idaho or Iowa, wherever they occurred, it was the people in the Democratic Party and the people in the United States want a change. And that change can come about only if those who are delegates in Chicago recognize the importance of what has happened here in the state of California, what has happened in South Dakota, what happened in New Hampshire, what happened across the rest of this country. The country wants to move in a different direction. We want to deal with our own problems within our own country, and we want peace in Vietnam.
Unless I'm a bit distracted now by a lot of shouting and screaming,
Kennedy near death. The subheadline, partially paralyzed from wound, suspect identified as Jordanian. And the story, which is byline Dial Torgerson, a Times staff writer, says that Senator Robert Kennedy, shot down in a moment of triumph, lay partly paralyzed and near death Wednesday at a Los Angeles hospital, and goes on to quote one doctor, "He might not make it." Now, this is a dire prediction, and we are quoting the Los Angeles Times Thursday morning edition, which has just been received here at the press center at Good Samaritan Hospital in Los Angeles.
Deeply disturbed, as I know you are, by lawlessness and violence in our country, of which this tragedy is the latest spectacular example. We do not know the reasons that inspired the attack on Senator Kennedy. We know only that a brilliant career of public service has been brutally interrupted, that a young leader of uncommon energy and dedication, who has served his country tirelessly and well, and whose voice and example has touched millions throughout the entire world, has been senselessly and horribly stricken. At this moment, the outcome is still in the balance.
Frank Mankiewicz, the press aide of Senator Robert Kennedy, has just entered, and he has a statement to read to us at this time. He is walking rather slowly and wearily toward the podium at the moment, making his way through the crowd of newsmen who have been standing vigil here throughout the night. The time here in Los Angeles at the present time, about 2 minutes before 2 a.m. There has been no announcement since 5:30 p.m. Los Angeles time, and this is the first statement that we have on the condition of Senator Kennedy since that hour. Mr. Mankiewicz is now mounting the podium, and we will hear the statement in just a moment. He's looking at his notes, looking very, very tired, standing by, still glancing down at his notes. He looks up, and he is about to speak.
I have a short announcement to read, which I will read at this time. Senator Robert Francis Kennedy died at 1:44 a.m. today, June 6, 1968. With Senator Kennedy, at the time of his death, were his wife, Ethel, his sisters, Mrs. Stephen Smith, Mrs. Patricia Lawford, brother-in-law, Mr. Stephen Smith, and his sister-in-law, Mrs. John F. Kennedy. He was 42 years old.
Your Eminences, Your Excellencies, Mr. President, on behalf of Mrs. Kennedy, her children, the parents and sisters of Robert Kennedy, I want to express what we feel to those who mourn with us today in this cathedral and around the world. We loved him as a brother and as a father and as a son. From his parents and from his older brothers and sisters, Joe and Kathleen and Jack, he received an inspiration which he passed on to all of us. He gave us strength in time of trouble, wisdom in time of uncertainty, and sharing in time of happiness. He will always be by our side. Love is not an easy feeling to put into words, nor is loyalty, or trust, or joy. But he was all of these. He loved life completely, and he lived it intensely. A few years back, Robert Kennedy wrote some words about his own father, which expresses the way we and his family felt about him. He said of what his father meant to him, and I quote, "What it really all adds up to is love. Not love as it is described with such facility in popular magazines, but the kind of love that is affection and respect, order and encouragement and support. Our awareness of this was an incalculable source of strength. And because real love is something unselfish and involves sacrifice and giving, we could not help but profit from it." And he continued, "Beneath it all, he has tried to engender a social conscience. There were wrongs which needed attention. There were people who were poor and needed help. And we have a responsibility to them and to this country. Through no virtues and accomplishments of our own, we have been fortunate enough to be born in the United States under the most comfortable conditions. We, therefore, have a responsibility to others who are less well off." That is what Robert Kennedy was given. What he leaves to us is what he said, what he did, and what he stood for. A speech he made to the young people of South Africa on their day of affirmation in 1966 sums it up the best, and I would like to read it now. "There is discrimination in this world, and slavery and slaughter and starvation. Governments repress their people. Millions are trapped in poverty while the nation grows rich and wealth is lavished on armaments everywhere. These are differing evils, but they are the common works of man. They reflect the imperfection of human justice, the inadequacy of human compassion, our lack of sensibility towards the suffering of our fellows. But we can perhaps remember, even if only for a time, that those who live with us are our brothers, that they share with us the same short moment of life, that they seek, as we do, nothing but the chance to live out their lives in purpose and happiness, winning what satisfaction and fulfillment they can. Surely this bond of common faith, this bond of common goal, can begin to teach us something. Surely we can learn, at least, to look at those around us as fellow men. And surely we can begin to work a little harder to bind up the wounds among us and to become in our own hearts brothers and countrymen once again. The answer is to rely on youth, not a time of life, but a state of mind, a temper of the will, a quality of imagination, a predominance of courage over timidity, of the appetite for adventure over the love of ease. The cruelties and obstacles of this swiftly changing planet will not yield to the obsolete dogmas and outworn slogans. They cannot be moved by those who cling to a present that is already dying, who prefer the illusion of security to the excitement and danger that come with even the most peaceful progress. It is a revolutionary world we live in, and this generation at home and around the world has had thrust upon it a greater burden of responsibility than any generation that has ever lived. Some believe there is nothing one man or one woman can do against the enormous array of the world's ills. Yet many of the world's great movements of thought and action have flowed from the work of a single man. A young monk began the Protestant Reformation. A young general extended an empire from Macedonia to the borders of the earth. A young woman reclaimed the territory of France. And it was a young Italian explorer who discovered the New World, and the 32-year-old Thomas Jefferson who reclaimed that all men are created equal. These men move the world, and so can we all. Few will have the greatness to bend history itself, but each of us can work to change a small portion of events, and in the total of all those acts will be written the history of this generation. Each time a man stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance. Few are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is a rarer commodity than bravery in battle or great intelligence. Yet it is the one essential, vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change. And I believe that in this generation, those with the courage to enter the moral conflict will find themselves with companions in every corner of the globe. For the fortunate among us, there is the temptation to follow the easy and familiar paths of personal ambition and financial success, so grandly spread before those who enjoy the privilege of education. But that is not the road history has marked out for us. Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty, but they are also more open to the creative energy of men than any other time in history. All of us will ultimately be judged. And as the years pass, we will surely judge ourselves on the effort we have contributed to building a new world society and the extent to which our ideals and goals have shaped that event. Our future may lie beyond our vision, but it is not completely beyond our control. It is the shaping impulse of America that neither fate nor nature nor the irresistible tides of history, but the work of our own hands, matched to reason and principle, that will determine our destiny. There is pride in that, even arrogance, but there is also experience and truth. And in any event, it is the only way we can live. That is the way he lived, and that is what he leaves us. My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life, to be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it. Those of us who loved him and who take him to his rest today pray that what he was to us, what he wished for others, will someday come to pass for all the world. As he said many times in many parts of this nation, to those he touched and who sought to touch him, some men see things as they are and say why. I dream things that never were and say why not.